may have an inkling of what could be the big craze this year as far as Christmas presents might be like.
Oh.
Out of the United States, if that's a trendsetter anyway. They're called robotic Zoot Suit pets. They're actually robotic hamsters.
Where do they come from?
And they're actually made in China, funny that. But they're very, very low-tech and very, very cheap. They retail about $10, but demand for them has been so great that on eBay and Craigslist, they're fetching $40 or more than that. Vital accessories such as the hamster car and funhouse are sold separately. So there you go. They don't do very much. They just scurry around. They make noises. They do drive cars because they've got the hamster car to go with it. But apart from that, very low tech.
Okay, well, we've got Mr. Tech here in the studio, Mr. Futurist, and that is our good friend, of course, Morris Misalowski. Morris, how are you?
I'm excellent, thanks. How are you?
I mean, we've seen these sort of things before, haven't we? Toys?
I've actually seen this.
Have you?
This is a cute little thing, and you're right, it's the big storm in the States.
It's quite amazing, because the owner of this toy store says that he recently got a call at 4 o'clock in the morning from a mother saying, I want that toy. And the stores, they've set up some factories in China to make this, and they've had to go buy more factories and hire more workers because they can't keep up with the demand. And the shoppers in the United States are calling the stores in China to try to get to the source because they can't get into the United States. Oh. It's amazing.
So it's an incredible little thing. It is, as you said, a little like a little hamster. And you stroke its neck to bring it alive and it starts running around. And as part of the kit, you get these little tubes and things it runs up. And as you said, it drives cars and has Ferris wheels and things. So it does these random activities that run around, and the kids, as you said, love it.
It doesn't die after 5 years.
Well,
or maybe it will.
It does.
What happens when the battery's
going?
Well,
this is a problem, yes. But it was featured on The View and a couple of other shows in the States, some of those big ones, and that's where it came from. That's where the hit came from.
And apparently there were mummy blogger parties as well, which started or really helped things along. And they're saying they might not be able to get production enough to meet demand at Christmas, but there is always Chinese New Year. And Chinese New Year next year is supposed to be the year of the tiger, but as far as toys are concerned, it's probably going to be the year of the hamster.
Well, it's also the year of technology, of course. Well, I've just invented that. I just said that. It's probably not the year of technology, whatever.
Every year is the year of technology.
Let's cross now to Jeremy Wagstaff. He's a technology commentator. He keeps a blog at loosewireblog.com with a special link to the stuff that he talks about here on Radio Australia Today. How are you, Jeremy?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah, I haven't got my juju pet yet. I'm waiting for it.
I've got to just say to you at the very beginning here, we've had technology reach a new level here in Australia because we've got an opposition that is in bad trouble at the moment. We've got a vote on an emissions trading scheme, and the opposition leader has just managed to keep enough people in support of this emissions trading scheme to ensure it goes through Parliament. But now one of his senior supporters has canvassed on Twitter support to see if he should challenge for the leadership. If he challenged for the leadership, he would win. So Twitter is now being used to decide our political and our environmental future. How's that?
That's excellent. So we heard about it first on your show, and now it's even permeated the halls of power.
Extraordinary. This is an extraordinary thing. Let's go back a little bit to Wikipedia. Now, there are reports that Wikipedia is on the way down.
That's right. There was a piece in the Wall Street Journal earlier this week pointing out that the number of people involved in editing Wikipedia articles has been in decline. They quoted figures which suggested that maybe they've lost 10% of the number of Wikipedians. People are actually actively involved in editing stuff. And so this is kind of raising a little bit of noise, some heart-searching about whether Wikipedia is in decline, whether we're going to actually still have Wikipedia around in 5 years' time.
Do the editors actually get paid, or is it all volunteer work?
It's all volunteer work, actually. All these people do it for nothing. They are mainly motivated by desire to kind of get involved in something. A guy I know here says he does it because he's a pedant, but actually I think he's being rather modest. He's a classicist, speaks Latin and Greek, and so he's involved in correcting and improving and adding to the Wikipedia content there. So I think the vast majority of people involved in Wikipedia are doing it for good reasons, the right reasons. The problem is that there's a small group who are so involved, so engaged, so committed to Wikipedia that they tend to be somewhat proprietary about the contents, and so they've become known as the deletionists. They're very quick to delete other people's content if it doesn't comply with one of the myriad rules that these Wikipedians have created for themselves to keep order in the Wikipedia universe.
You know what? My wife's got had a little mention in Wikipedia, and they took it off because she'd only won 3 awards, and they said that's not enough, I'm afraid, for a Wikipedia entry, and they deleted it.
Right. Yeah, that's the deletionist at work.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, we've got to tell you, just interrupting you for a second. We've had another wicket go in the cricket, Australia versus the Windies. Australia's now 6 for 373. Haddon just caught out by Rumdon, bowled Rumpole for 38, and Mitchell Johnson has just taken to the crease. He's pretty good on one day cricket, but I don't know how he's going to do in a test. We'll see. So Australia 6 for 373. Firefox has turned 5. Addy uses Firefox.
I do. It's a good alternative to Internet Explorer or Safari.
Now, can I ask you this, Adeline? Do you install extensions, add-ons, plugins in your Firefox browser, or do you use it sort of as it is, out of the box?
No, I've just added some extensions, and I'm just having fun with them. I mean, you can do amazing things with them, like instantly download a YouTube video. And I remember trying to do that before the extensions, and, you know, that took quite a few hours.
What do you mean download? You mean, like, put it on your computer?
Well, or that's watch right. It? So you can play it at any time.
Oh,
it
really?
Sits on
I've
your
never
computer.
Been able to do that.
Well,
yeah.
Well, there you go. There's a Firefox extension.
What about Opera?
For you.
I've heard so much about Opera. You know, that's the other browser that no one ever talks about. But it's supposed to be good.
Yeah, it's rather sad. I mean, it is very good. They've just come out with their 10th version. They've been going for more than 10 years, Scandinavian company. And they have focused on speed, lightness. The installation file is still very small. Increasingly, they've turned towards mobile phones. So I think maybe a third, maybe half of the internet access from mobile phones is done via the mobile Opera mini browser. And so they focused on that because they're very good at compressing data so that it's smaller, it loads quicker, and this, of course, is important on mobile phones, less so on desktop computers with broadband connections. But now Google has come up with Chrome, which we've spoken about here, and they seem to be taking quite a bit of market share from Opera and also from Firefox.
Oh. So the future, then, for Firefox, can it outlive Chrome?
Well, I think so. I think this extensions idea is great. I'm very excited Adeline is getting into this kind of thing. But extensions are little things that you plug into the browser.
They're She's not really, Jeremy. She just read that in a magazine about extensions, and she just thought she'd put it on air.
incredibly knowledgeable. I was deeply impressed. But these kind of things add functionality to the browser and make it do more than what it would do if you just sort of let it sit on your computer and you didn't customize it. And there are hundreds of different extensions out there. They reckon that maybe a third to half of Firefox users install extensions, but I think it should be much higher than that. There are all sorts of applications out there, one which will let you know if something you're about to buy on a website is actually cheaper somewhere else.
I need that one. Please tell me where to get that.
Well, maybe if you're buying a Juju pet, you know, you're finding a large amount of money on eBay, that might be a useful tool.
She won't have any time, but you've got to feed and water the Juju pets. You won't have time to do any of this internet stuff.
Well, I have a reputation for killing bamboo, so no, not very good.
How do you do that?
I don't know. I just don't have the green fingers on me. But a warning about those extensions, the YouTube extension, everything that you play on the Firefox then eventually gets downloaded automatically. And I got quite a shock the other day just to check how much of my bandwidth had been that I've been allowed has been used up, and it was like 80%, and I had 15 days to go, and I've never gone that far before, so it really just swallows up your bandwidth.
Do you ever watch the videos that you download?
No, I didn't realize it was automatically doing that. I thought I could actually choose which ones I wanted, so I've got to find a way around that.
Yeah, there must be a setting somewhere in there you can tweak to make that happen, otherwise you're going to be internet-less for the rest of the month.
Yes, I'm hoping not to go there.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know how to live. What would I do when I go home?
Well,
I'd have to clean the house. Oh, my God. I'd have to water a bamboo plant.
Now, let's move on. Apple refusing to fix computers belonging to smokers.
Yeah, this is an odd one. consumers have started reporting that they have been told that Apple won't, under the guarantee scheme that people usually purchase when they purchase a Mac, that Apple won't service these computers if they notice, if they sense that there's any cigarette smoke or residue on the computer, because they say that this constitutes a biohazard, and that nicotine is on the Occupational Safety and Health Administration's list of hazardous substances. And so Apple won't require an employee to repair anything deemed hazardous to their health.
Oh, okay.
So what they basically do is say, sorry, I'm not going to fix your computer.
Because you smoke?
Because you smoke, yeah.
And that's not healthy for you?
Well, it's less to do with the consumer. They're just, I suppose the argument is that they want to protect their workers, their employees from residue. The thing is, though, that there's nothing in the warranties which say this, which would give Apple protection from what I'm guessing are going to be some lawsuits. And how do you determine what constitutes smoke? I mean, maybe you took your MacBook out to a barbecue or something like that. Does that void the warranty? People want to know.
Can't you get rid of the smell just by spraying some sort of anti-smell, antibacterial sort of spray, usually to get rid of toilet odors?
That would work. That would work.
So I really don't understand the reasoning behind this.
Have you guys taken your Mac in to be fixed? Have you had any problems with it?
I've had a couple of problems over the last couple of years. Yeah, I had a drive that went down. I think it was a motherboard problem as well. They're both fixed under warranty, but I had a couple of problems, yeah.
Hmm. The thing is, if you look at the list of the OSHA list of hazardous substances, you also find things like calcium carbonate, hydrogen peroxide, talcum powder, chlorine. These are all also hazardous substances. So at what point does Apple say, well, we can't clean your computer because clearly you've been bathing baby while you're using your Mac on the keyboard? I think that maybe, you know, they're kind of going a little bit too far here. And the problem is that Apple is always considered to be very caring towards its customers. After-sales service tends to be of a very high quality, which makes people feel comfortable about buying the computer in the first place. I do worry that there's going to be a little bit of a backlash if people if this trend continues.
Okay, good to speak to you, Jeremy Wagstaff, and of course your blog is kept at loosefireblog.com, and we're going to talk to you again next week. Thanks for your time.
A pleasure.
Appreciate it. See you.
Bye, Jeremy.
Yeah, some interesting stuff that came up there. So what do you reckon? What do you reckon about, first of all, this whole thing about where we're going to be going with technology, with the Firefox turning 5? You know, do you think that that Chrome is really going to do it in?
No. Firefox is a wonderful application. Chrome will take a bit of the marketplace for sure because it has the Google brand behind it, but I've used Firefox for years and would recommend it. For your video problem, I'd suggest you use the Vimeo download.
I've heard of Vimeo.
So get rid of the one you've got. Vimeo will do the same thing for you, but it'll allow you to choose the ones you want.
So you can't tweak a little Firefox thing and
I don't know which one you're using.
You should be able to,
but Vimeo definitely will. You've got to ask it to do it for you. And for those that don't want Firefox, if you want to download your video, use something called Vixy, VIXY.net, free program online. You can either download it to your desktop or use it straight out of your browser, and it will download the video to your desktop. You just need to copy the URL so go to YouTube, copy the URL, go to vixy.net, paste it in, and press download, and it's yours.
Okay.
Vimeo just sounds a tad bit easier.
I actually use Vixy, I must say, more often though, but the Vimeo one is definitely worth doing if you want the Firefox extension.
Okay, I'll check that out.
This is our tech segment. In fact, in a minute, we'll be crossing to Phil Whelan at RTHK in Hong Kong. In fact, let's see what he's up to. He's into distortion, obviously.
I think he's in a computer game.
I think he is too. He certainly played better. Sounds like the soundtrack to Terminator, doesn't it, really?
clearly listening, otherwise he would have said something by now.
Oh, he will. He will.
I'm actually just letting you guys dig deeper and deeper.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. We knew that was going to happen.
I wonder if he's listening.
Yes.
Who was that?
This is the Kings of Leon.
Oh, was it? Oh.
It's good, isn't it? What's going on?
We've had a political contretemps here in Australia.
Yeah?
Yeah. It looks like we're going to have a new... In fact, we're watching it's a minute-by-minute thing. Our opposition leader managed to get a deal for an emissions trading scheme here in Australia. And there was a leadership spill because half his party didn't want this to happen. Just under half of his party didn't want this to happen. There was a leadership spill on Wednesday, or there was a vote on whether they should be one, and he won that. But his party, the rebels in his party, couldn't wait to give him at least a week of comfort, and they today, even one of his former supporters has sent out a Twitter canvassing the Australian public to ask whether he should actually challenge the man that only yesterday he was saying he had his full support and confidence in. So we are
it's
going
a bit
to
worrying if he has to get the public's opinion before deciding, Twitter. Okay, let's go for it.
What's the bet he's already decided? But, yeah, we'll see. But the emissions trading scheme is not through the Senate yet. If it gets through, the time that has been set by the government is 3:45 Australian Eastern Time today. If it doesn't get through, if Malcolm Turnbull doesn't survive, the opposition leader doesn't survive till 3:45 today, the emissions trading scheme is probably dead, and that would mean that we would have an election. The government would almost certainly call a double disillusion election, which, as many commentators would say, including Malcolm Turnbull himself, they would win in a canter. So the face of Australian politics would change quite severely after this, I think.
You'd actually get some. What would happen if this thing goes through?
If it goes through, what this means is that there would be a tax on everything, well, almost everything, not agriculture, but everyone who uses carbon in any way, gas, electricity, even products that are used, petrol, all of those things would have an extra tax on them that would be used for offsetting the emissions. The whole idea is two things, offset the emissions, and the second thing is to encourage people to use less carbon-emitting products. So that's what it's supposed to be about.
Yeah. It's right high on their agenda, actually, of course, because of the upcoming, Copenhagen thing. But Kevin Rudd explained it all to the world the other day on the BBC in very simple terms.
What did he say?
Well, he just explained all the words.
Oh, did he?
We don't really understand. I mean, he said, let's get rid of the legalese. That's what he said.
Mm, yeah. And he did it in legalese?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Our headline this morning here is Mainland Unveils Carbon Target. I don't know if the China angle on this has sort of hit the press where you are.
It certainly has. It's a big story here at the moment. I mean, you've been following it too, haven't you? We've got Morris Misalowski here, of course, and Adeline Ng. It's the whole thing,
the A-team.
The tribe is here. Yeah, absolutely. That's been one of the big stories here in Australia. In fact, we've been talking about that as we've, across the morning this morning. Extraordinary, the amount of the targets that they are setting in China.
I'm just reminded of the Olympics when basically everything was shut down, everybody was turfed out with no thought about, but these guys won't be making a living whilst the Olympics is on. I know I'm a cynic, but, what I mean? You don't, do
no,
you?
No, not really. Not really. Yeah.
All the factories and stuff were closed down to clean up the city, and you did get the very strong impression there wasn't exactly a B plan to look after the workers, but who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, the B plan. Well, that's it. We want to see what the B plan is. Maybe there will, maybe there won't be one. Who knows?
Oh, and the other news is that the Disneyland in Shanghai is going to be small. Okay, there you go. That's why I never really tell you much about this.
Smaller than the Hong Kong one?
Yeah. Because obviously when it first came out, people say, Hong Kong needs to wake up and smell the coffee. But it seems like it's not going to be an issue, really. Maybe even smaller.
Wow.
Which is daft, really, because Disneyland is supposed to be huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what does that mean for Hong Kong tourism? Because it hasn't been a huge, as I understand, it hasn't been that big a hit, Disneyland in Hong Kong.
I think it's been a real pull for mainland tourists from southern China, Guangdong region, loads and loads and loads. Not really terribly popular with people, locals in Hong Kong, but people all have kids and they want to take them up there. Well, I don't,
Were there actually incentives for taxi drivers to bring people to Disneyland in Hong Kong? Unless I'm confusing countries.
Pass. No idea.
It's not promoted
actually,
in Australia,
actually, the taxi drivers, there was a whole thing recently where if you take a shorter journey, you pay like a dollar more. But if you take a real long journey, like central to the airport, I don't know, $300 or whatever, it works out cheaper because people were, like illegal taxi drivers, were offering way less, so they wanted to put a lid on it. But apart from that, I don't know.
Taking your kids to Disneyland, have you heard about this new teenager-proof car?
No.
Actually, Maurice, you've got the details on that one, haven't you?
It's an interesting thing that Ford's announcing. It's one of the things they're talking about doing in the next few years, that when your kids drive your car, you'll give them a special key or a master key, as they're calling it, and it will change the configuration of the way they can use the car.
Mm-hmm.
It'll slow it down. It'll turn them, which I love this bit, it'll turn the volume of the radio down to 44%. And it will also make sure that there are signals all the time about putting seat belts on. The other one is that it will remind them to put petrol in much sooner than it does now. But as someone who has a teenage son who is learning, I think all these things are very interesting. So it's amazing what we're trying to do with our technology to curb our children.
Do you think it'll work?
No.
All you have to do is steal Dad's keys and you're away.
Well, that's right. And how annoying is it to have an alarm go off warning you that you're about your petrol tank is about to go empty?
And the voices always sound like you.
Oh, thank you.
But yeah, you know,
drive me to a petrol station. No.
Sort of underestimating teenagers, but your average savvy kid could hack into the Federal Reserve. But they're saying that he couldn't remember to put gas in his tank.
Oh, look, my kid would just go and knock off my key. Exactly. Wouldn't even think twice about it. In fact, he'd swap keys with me.
I'm really embarrassed to say this, but usually that petrol tank early warning system would be really good for a lot of women. And I say that because I know of women who have to call out companies that come and rescue you when you're stranded on the freeway, and they say there's something wrong. It's not working anymore. It's not driving anymore. And these guys come out, work through the traffic, usually in peak hours, to find that the problem was that they'd run out of petrol. I'm really sorry about that.
Oh. Nice one, though. Bit of honesty.
Yeah, mm. Why not? She's got it off
the
chest now, anyway.
I won't always do that, but yes, that's right.
All right, let's move on to a couple of other things that are happening around here. Anything else happening in Hong Kong?
No.
Okay.
It's closed for the week. <It's>
But you know all about orchestras, Phil. Some, yes. You've played a couple of things. And Maurice has a story about robots being involved in future orchestras, possibly.
I'm sure you've known a few robots to play yourself, haven't you, Phil?
I've what?
You've known a few robots who have played the cello before?
No, couldn't possibly say that. This is a big issue, this one, actually, because technology aside, you know, Phil, that it's causing a lot of aggro in the musical world, basically.
Well, it certainly can. I mean, we drummers have sort of been replaced for 30 years.
Well, that's okay. I mean, that's different.
So this again is one of those things out of Japan where they are training a group of robots to be able to play in an orchestra. And what they're training them to do is not just to play the music, so you're not piping the music through them and they're pretending. It's actually participating, and they're likening it back to jazz, where the robots are watching and listening and interpreting what's being done in front of them.
That wouldn't work, because a robot drummer wouldn't drag. That wouldn't work.
So you can have a look.
You can program that in, presumably.
I assume so. But they're, again, trying to make these things fairly democratic. They're trying to make the robots work for themselves. You can have a look at a video of it.
Oh, so you don't have to pay them.
If you go to... I assume that is behind it. That's got to be.
Equity rates, yeah.
But when you say robots, is it for a visual effect, this thing? Because they've been using, you know... computerized music for years, especially in live shows.
I think this is a because you can type approach. He's building his way towards an orchestra. He had the first robot ready about a year and a half ago. The second one's come on stream now, and he's working his way through the rest of it with about a 5-year plan.
How do we find it online?
So if you can find it at my site, which is businessfuturist.me, or looking through YouTube.
So what is it? What's the address again?
It's businessfuturist.me. And you'll be able to find the video there.
I've got Robot Orchestra on YouTube in front of me. Is that mm-hmm. something different?
Might be. I don't know which one that is.
That could be those dogs that used to bark, you know, like to the sound of the Beatles.
If you want to, it most probably would be under Saxophonist Robot.
This is Brill.
You have to wonder, though. wonder what it's going to be like. It would be quite robotic, but I think, because what about the emotion that is in music and the expressions that you would enjoy watching on the performer? All that's going to be gone, isn't it?
Well, it is, but you could replace it with something else on their face, couldn't you?
Ah, right.
You could put some other kind of visual on. You're right, it will change the paradigm. It will definitely change the way it works. I don't know whether this thing will ever take off, but it's an interesting adjunct. I think it would be interesting as a teacher. It could be a good way to teach potential future musicians to learn.
What, to learn from a robot?
Yeah. The mechanics. I'm not talking about the feel, but just the mechanics of it. I know certainly my music teachers gave up very quickly because I couldn't pick up the mechanics, which is why I can't play anything.
All right, just so for the teacher's sanity, here, try a robot out first, and if you pass this grade, then you get to meet me.
I think so.
Oh, my goodness.
So, look, we'll see. Honda and Toyota are also on board with this, so they're all having a bash at trying to do this. But it seems to be one of those wonderful, delightful things in Japan that they do a lot of. They are really pushing the limits of what a robot can and will do.
And I have to interrupt for a second, because another wicket has fallen at the Gabba in Brisbane. This is Australia versus the West Indies.
2 for 22.
No, it's 7 for 393. And he's actually coming back. You know, Richie Beno, our Australian commentator in the cricket, he's about 110. He decided to retire last year, but everyone said, come back, Richie.
He's brilliant. He's an icon, I tell you. Fantastic.
And he does the job. He does it well. Why should he retire, you know? Oh, we nearly had another wicket go too. But, you know, I'm listening to everything you're saying, Phil. Don't worry about it.
So I'm talking to Howard on Facebook.
How is Howard?
He's fine. He's great.
Yeah, where's he at for coffee?
Where are you at for coffee, Howard? Computer says no.
You know, Twitter. You know, and I was saying a second ago that we use Twitter, that one of our opposition parliamentarians has used Twitter to canvass whether he should run for the leadership.
Yeah.
There's a story about a man who actually got arrested for not using Twitter.
It's incredible, isn't it? There's this musician called Justin Bieber. We all know him?
Yeah.
No. Okay. Well, there's one.
No.
Who went to a mall for a record or an LP signing or whatever they call it now, and there was a mob there, and the police couldn't do anything to move this mob along. They apparently asked him to Twitter out to his fans to tell them to disperse, otherwise the police would take action. The police claimed he didn't Twitter, and the crowd went crazy, and they therefore held him liable for the crowd.
What?
Now,
he's gone nuts.
He claims that he did Twitter, and of course Twitter has, you know, has the record of it, so they're in this court case now proving he did or he didn't, but the police are holding him liable because they asked him to Twitter and he refused to, they claim.
That's crazy.
So hasn't the world gone different?
Yeah, that's right. It's a good word.
Well, it's taking over. Morris, go with me on this one. How long before we get complete immersion? This stuff takes over. Absolutely takes over.
In my life? About 5 years ago?
Oh, in anybody's life. Oh. Let's put it this way. If the fella had done it there and then, everybody would have gone to their iPhones or whatever the heck they use. There would have been this mass sort of beep, bop, whatever, all over the place. Complete immersion into Twitter.
Well, apparently his fans didn't really care because enough of them got the message. The message said the event at Roosevelt Mall is cancelled. Please go home. The police already arrested one person from my camp. I don't want anyone else to be hurt. Was the message he sent out, and nobody bothered reading it.
I reckon, I'm going to answer your question, Phil, I reckon that there will be a big turnaround, as we're seeing in so many parts of the world. It's like people who are no longer using pesticide food, people who don't have TVs, we're seeing more of those, people who don't have cars. You know, I reckon that the people will cleave away from this to a degree. They'll use it when they need to, but it won't be the all-encompassing thing that people just fill their lives with, you know, everything, with all the junk and the Facebook and all that. You'll just go to it when you need it. You know?
Yeah, because it's great if you're a real famous person. I mean, who's Austin Kutcher and all these guys? But really, all they're doing is saying, I will be doing this today. Or it's reached its usefulness. It's evolved.
But I actually don't think we've seen its usefulness yet. I think what it has done is it's gone through its fad phase and it needs to become normalized, which is what happens to technology.
What could
If you think back to computers in the 80s when they first came out, they were also going to solve all of our problems.
Everyone was playing those little games with, you know, brickbats.
And life was going to be completely different, and we were all going to work 2 days a week and take off, you know, 5 days. Those things never came to fruition. Computers are now something we accept and we work them as a tool. Mm-hmm. These things are the same. Because they're voguish at the moment, because we talk a lot about them, people are have huge expectations of what they will become.
But Phil's question just then was, you know, what will we use it for?
I think we'll use it for lots of things. I mean, Twitter has great business purpose, for instance. We're able to make a lot of money out of Twitter. Social networking will allow us to have instant information about where we are, which is kind of what we want.
Morris has got this kick about it. So funny. You always tell us, the gadget of the day tells you where you are.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Because I'm always lost.
I know.
I downloaded the great one this week, which told me where my car was.
That's useful.
No, it's useless.
But if your car's stolen, it is.
Oh, no, it doesn't. It's useless.
It just tracks the car park, doesn't it?
Yeah. I actually had to point it in the direction of the car so I could find it.
Oh, well, so much for that. It was a nice idea. But TVs are evolving as well because people are finding new users for them, including using them as another
surfing.
Computer.
I think that's part of this whole thing, that eventually we're going to come down to one centralised thing, whatever it is, whether it's an iPhone or a TV screen, and we'll just start to accept that thing has all of our Facebooks and whatever on it. But the new TVs that are coming out now are being called a third computer screen. All of the high-end TVs now have internet access into them, and they're also beginning to have apps like our iPhones built for them, so that when you watch TV, you can interact with what's going on the TV.
But they have inputs for internet and whatever. Is it you'd have to plug it into your internet or have a wireless?
Or wireless, one or the other. But what it's giving you now is the ability then for that one screen, as we've always talked about, for that one screen to be everything or to be nothing. You choose how you want to use it.
I can never get that because it's in your lounge room, you know?
I use one screen for everything.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The thing is, this
I actually use a projector for most things.
Once again, habits come into this.
It is.
Because people associate television with not doing that stuff that's associated with work. So you might want to just keep it as the TV because it's your downtime.
In which case, just switch it over to be that.
But
it's the one device that lets
you do. Yeah, but a lot of people also use their computers to do things like listen to music, and they like to have the artwork of the album on the screen.
Exactly.
And to watch movies, and to watch YouTube videos as well. So that's
Or if you're watching a movie and you want to find out more about the actor or the actress in that, you can go and dive into it and find that kind of thing.
Instead of watching the movie.
Instead of watching
the artwork. Yeah. Just great.
Well, you would record the movie. I mean, that's what's happening now with our kids anyway. They're not really watching in live time. They're recording all this stuff in some way or other and watching it somewhere else some other time.
Well, even now, one of the big cable TV companies here in Australia has just announced that you can now download some of their programs if you're a subscriber onto your PC. So that's another reason why people are getting big screen computers.
Absolutely.
Phil's not saying anything here because I know what he's thinking. You're sort of thinking, what?
He's looking very thoughtful.
Whatever happened to just turning on the box?
No, I know.
It's so old-fashioned. So old.
Now, I did actually get wireless, and I must say that I've gone over to the dark side now because I play music in another room, just ambient music in another room using the wireless thing. And while I'm sitting in the lounge room where the TV is and doing the... And I have to say that I agree with Morris here because I'm watching a movie, I'm going, whatever happened to her? So while the movie's on, I'll get the laptop on my lap and I'm looking up Wiki or something.
See, someone else has come over the dark side.
Yeah.
But you know, when you talk about what the purpose of all this stuff is, there's this beautiful iPhone app that only came out this week that I'm really in love with, and that's a simple app. It's free and it gives you the Louvre. So you download this app on the iPhone.
The Louvre?
The Louvre.
The Louvre.
The Louvre.
You been to the Louvre film?
The Lou,
yeah.
Or
yeah, no,
haven't you?
Download this app.
I'm going to get kitted up. I'm going to go and spend squillions of dollars that I don't have, so that I can go to the Lou.
You don't have to. Now you can just watch it
on
a 1.5-inch by 1-inch screen.
But it's beautiful because it allows you to see the artwork. You can actually go through. You can see some of the masterpieces. You can watch video. You can read about it.
Give you an idea of how small the Mona Lisa is.
No, isn't that incredible when you go and actually see it?
It is tiny,
like,
isn't it?
What? Yeah, because they magnify in your art books, don't they? When you go through.
You've been there, Adeline, have you?
I have been.
And Morris, you've been there too. We've all stood on the same spot. Phil, you haven't been there, have you?
No, I haven't.
No.
Well, there's some homework for the week.
Thank you. I'll do that. I was wondering what to do this weekend.
Just pop on over.
The other interesting thing that you're saying is that Iraq's museum collection is now online.
It is, for the same thing. So what's happened is Google has gone in there. Iraq's museum's been closed. People haven't been able to see the artwork. So Google went in and took photos of it, I mean digital photos of it, and they're putting those things up online. So in many ways what we have now is access to something that we might not otherwise be able to see for quite a while.
Because I think a lot of people would be quite interested in Iraq's artworks, but, you know, there's just so many safety issues with visiting the country. They're not just prepared to make the trip.
Well, it's also not open. You can't get into the museum.
Oh, well, that's
so
another point.
Even if you could, you wouldn't be able to. But we're talking about that as well, and we're talking about, I think there's about 10 million books coming online also through Google next year, who have spent the last couple of years digitising
lots and lots of libraries so that we have access to it.
It was a big potential lawsuit, wasn't it?
And there still is. It's always in the wind. It's been in the wind for a while. I don't think we're going to see the end of that, because some camps think it's a wonderful thing to have happened. Other people, publishers, authors, are fighting against it. So we'll wait and see. But we are seeing an increasing amount of digitized image coming online over the next few years.
Okay. And you wouldn't have been to any of these places anyway, Phil, so this will be for you.
I'm just thinking we're going to get a whole new set of diseases coming out of all these electronics that we live around.
Yeah. Now, you're talking about going to the Louvre. I mean,
we've been to Iraq since then.
I know, but, you know, what about, like, going on holiday? I'm not being deliberately retrograde here, because I'm into all this stuff too, but slowly but surely, the things that we take as normal are being ticked out.
And replaced with other normals.
You go on holiday online. you even read a book that you would read on the metro online.
See, I'm never going to go along with that. I love turning pages. I love all that stuff. I love feeling the books, especially.
But that's the thing, again, it's the habit, it's the habitual stuff.
And what you like.
It's all well and good moving forward with the times, great. But there are little things that humans like to do. And you're dead on there.
Our breed's dying out.
But we will continue to do it. It's never a matter of something taking over, it's a matter of it being replaced. Some people always do what they've preferred, and some people move on.
I mean, they thought newspapers would die, didn't they, with television,
that's
radio?
That's an interesting debate of whether it will or will. And you're right.
It's not doing well, newspapers at the moment around the world.
No.
Not as well, or just not well?
Just
not doing
not
well around the world. Yes, there are quite a few sick newspapers around the world. Their readerships are down. They're managing to just hang on, but it could be because they've got online content related.
Although Murdoch now wants Google to pay for the online content access.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting. And a couple of other newspapers have jumped on board with that as well. Mm. So we'll see where that debate takes us.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm wondering if that people will say, basically stuff them, if that's the case. The SEMP is a pay service as well here.
Oh yeah.
I don't know what the figures are, but then you go to the Times or whatever, and I believe it's free.
It just means you have to have Google and Bing as your
colleagues. We were talking to somebody who's from the Murdoch stable. He said yes, but Murdoch does it well. I went, really?
He does well, but this is a Herculean effort. I don't see how he's going to.
Tell you what, boys.
Yep.
Have a look at the clock right now.
Yeah.
We've got 33 seconds. What's the problem?
I could pop across to France in that time. Here, look.
Well done. We'll talk to you.
Okay, ciao. Have a good one. Bye. And that was Phil Wheeler at RTHK in Hong Kong. Morris, it is time for us to say goodbye until next week.
Au revoir.
Morris Misalowski. And your website again?
It's businessfuturist.com.
And what was the businessfuturist.me thing?
That's my blog.
Oh, your blog. Good. So you can either ME or com.
Whichever one you want.
Business Futurist. And you didn't put your own name in there, which is good. Probably like me putting my name in there.
You can if you want. Yeah, that one works too.
Okay. Adelaide...